You focus on the breath and try to adjust the breath so it feels good in the body. And allow that comfortable breath sensation to spread throughout the body. So you get a sense of ease, fullness, refreshment. We call that both playing with the breath and working with the breath. It's work in the sense that it does require effort, and we're doing it for the sake of accomplishing something. It's play in that we're exploring, experimenting, enjoying it. That's the best kind of work and the best kind of play, when you can put them together like that. And it's important that you realize that as we're playing with the breath, it's not just playing around. We are trying to accomplish something really important here, develop concentration, both as a good place to stay in the present moment and as a foundation for insight. Some people wonder how you can play with the present moment and see things as they really are. Well, that's based on the idea, or that question is based on the idea that the present moment is a given and you just have to be quiet enough to watch what's given. But that wasn't the Buddha's understanding of the present moment. He saw that it was something that you fabricate. And it's not just fabrication coming in from the past. There's fabrication in the present moment. And you can't see the process of fabrication in the present clearly until you learn how to do it skillfully. So this is why we work and play with the breath. We accomplish a lot of things this way. One is that it gives us something engaging to do in the present moment to get us to stay here to begin with. If it's just in, out, in, out, in, out, all of a sudden the mind is going to go out, wandering away out of sheer boredom. And then the concentration becomes an exercise in willpower. How long can you force the mind to stay here in spite of its impulses to wander away? But if you can see that by staying with the breath, working with the breath, playing with the breath, you're actually making the present moment a more interesting, a more pleasant place to stay, then you're more likely to stay here. You find it more engaging, especially when you see there are aches and pains in different parts of the body and you can use the breath and energy to work through them. When you find that you're tired, you can use the breath in a way to give yourself more energy. Or if you're too tense, you can breathe in a way that's more relaxing. You see that you actually are accomplishing something here. And that makes it more interesting to stay in the present moment. And the more interested you can get in the present moment, the more firmly you'll stay. Not only right now, but also as a long-term project. That's a second benefit that comes from working with the breath. If you see that the meditation is accomplishing something and it's pleasant, it can be even a rapturous and refreshing place to stay. It's a lot easier to stick with it over the long haul. As John Fung used to say, it's like having an engine in the sense of rapture and fullness and refreshment. That's the lubricant for the engine. If you run your engine without any lubricant, it's going to seize up and stop. The lubricant is what keeps you going. But working and playing with a breath like this also gives you some good tools and a good foundation for gaining insight. To begin with, it gives you a good place to stay, and you know, so you can actually watch suffering and stress. Our duty with regard to the suffering and stress is to comprehend it. And if you feel threatened by it, you're not going to be able to stay with it long enough to comprehend it. There's always going to be the wish either to push it away or to run away from it. But if you have a good, solid, pleasant, foundation in the body. You have a sense of confidence. If the pain gets bad, you have a good place to go. And so you can stand by the pain and watch it more consistently, more continuously. With the desire to see it for what it is. That's what comprehending means. You actually see it to the point where you can be ready to develop some dispassion toward it. To notice how it comes, how it goes, what the mind is doing that aggravates it, what the mind can do it that doesn't aggravate it. This way you begin to comprehend what's going on. And having the pleasure of a good state of concentration also gives you an alternative place to go when there's pain. Because people who don't have this source of pleasure, this source of well-being, know only one alternative to pain, and that's sensory pleasure, sensual pleasure. And that's the kind of pleasure that keeps you blind. Whereas the pleasure of concentration, the pleasure of jhana, is called the pleasure of form, inhabiting your body from within, just having a sense of being in the body and finding it pleasant. When you have this more refined sense of pleasure, that enables you not only to withstand pain and not go running off into sensual pleasure, but also enables you to see more refined forms of stress that you wouldn't have seen otherwise. You can actually see what's going on, what you're doing, that makes the level of stress in your mind go up and down, makes the level of pain in the body go up and down. And we're talking about really subtle things as well here, which you wouldn't see if the mind didn't have this level of concentration. And it wouldn't have that level of concentration without the sense of ease that you can develop by working and playing with the breath. And it puts the mind in a much better mood to admit its own involvement in the course, in the creation of stress. Because this is something we usually don't like to see. When there's suffering and stress, there's a tendency to blame it on somebody else. And especially when the mind has been doing things that deep down inside it knows better it shouldn't be doing. It doesn't like to admit that to itself. So one of the purposes of creating this sense of ease and well-being here is to put the mind in a much better mood, so it is more willing to say, oh yeah, that was my mistake. I am responsible for that. Because that's one of the lessons of the Four Noble Truths, is that the suffering that weighs down the mind is not just the pain in the body. It's not the things that come at you. It's how you handle those things, based on your own ignorance, your own attachment, your own clinging and craving. Something we normally don't like to admit to ourselves. It's like trying to talk to a person about his faults. If you catch him when he's in a foul mood, he's not going to want to listen. He's going to be even more closed off to hearing what you have to say. But if you can catch him in a good mood, or put him in a good mood first, make sure he's well fed, well rested, you can develop a sense of trust. Okay, then it's a lot easier to talk to him about his faults. He'll be more willing to do something about them. That's the same with the mind. You soften up the mind by allowing it to feel a sense of well-being as you breathe in, well-being as you breathe out, sense of well-being, ease, refreshment that doesn't require a lot of investment. It requires an investment of time. So as you get more skillful at it, but as you get more skillful, it becomes more and more accessible. And as you get more skilled in it, then you start seeing this process of fabrication as it's happening. You get more sensitive to it. There's no way you're going to get beyond your attachment to fabrication unless you've learned how to master it. It's one of the basic principles of the practice. Or as John Lee says, you can't let go like a pauper. The pauper doesn't have anything and says, okay, I'm let go of my riches and my Cadillac and all these other things that the pauper doesn't even have. Well, he's still poor. Nothing's really accomplished that way. But if you work at giving rise to the sense of well-being, you not only benefit from the ease in the present moment, but it does help give rise to insight. You start seeing how you create your present moment out of the raw materials coming from the past. This helps you get more sensitive to exactly what is that difference. Where is your present intention? What in your present experience is coming from the past? Intentions and choices you had and made in the past. And what's coming from your intentions right now? And where is your intention right now? As you develop the different forms of fabrication that go into meditation, into concentration, the bodily fabrication of the breath, the verbal fabrication of directing your thoughts to the breath and evaluating the breath, and then the mental fabrication of the feelings that arise from the breath, and then the perceptions that you use to stay with the breath and to help with this process of getting more and more familiar with what the breath can do. You really begin to see what is your present intention. Where is it skillful? Where is it not? What can you do to make it more skillful? How can you pare down all the unskillful parts? So you can see the really subtle forms of intention that keep everything together. As you get more skilled at this, you can get to a point of equilibrium, where you realize that any intention at all, even the intention to stay in concentration, is going to perpetuate stress. That's right there. There's an opening to freedom right there, right around this intention, this element of freedom you already have around your present intention that you have to learn how to explore by exercising your freedom to choose the skillful choice. So the concentration brings us right here to the point where things can open up. And it does it in such a way that we're more sensitive. And one of the paradoxes of the path is that the deathless is always there. But we have to become really, really sensitive in order to see it. And we have to learn how to look at the right spot so we can realize it. And this is what the practice of concentration does. It makes us more sensitive, brings us to the right spot. This element of fabrication, as you're fabricating concentration, fabricating the different levels of jhana, and seeing the grosser levels of fabrication peel away as you go through the levels of jhana. That's what gets you to the unfabricated. So it's not a matter of saying right up front, well, I'm not going to do anything, I'm just going to sit here and watch. Because what that does is it drives all the levels of fabrication underground. And at the same time, you don't have the foundation you need in order to deal with stress and actually look at it for what it is. You haven't gained the subtlety you need in order to see the subtle levels of stress going on in the mind. So it's important that we learn how to combine our work and play this way, working with the breath, getting a sense of how much is enough when you're working with it, how much is enough when you're playing with it. We're not here to gain the perfect breath or to be haunted with the idea, well, maybe there's a better way of breathing. If it's good enough to settle down with, it's good enough. And as you stick with what's good enough, your sensitivity and your taste in what's good enough is going to change. But you let that develop naturally. You're here to explore the present, and the techniques on playing and working with the breath give you some tools to use as you explore. So the present does become more and more the home where you can stay. And once you feel at home here, then you can really get to know it. So think of this as both work and play. It really does accomplish something and really is meant to be enjoyable as you do it. When you're sensitive to both of these elements, that's when you can go far.